SMQB, this is a special episode 163. We are coming to you from the Miami Grand Prix. We have a special guest. We'll get to that in a second. House, who are you sitting down with at a bar this week?
I will be sitting down with one Rob Thompson, the manager of the first place in all of Major League Baseball, Philadelphia Phillies. Enjoy milk.
Oh.
Really tough. $150 million.
Yeah. Milk, what do you got?
I'm going to go with Steven Stamkos. My Lightning were eliminated on Monday. I think the dynasty's over. I just want to talk about the last 10 years.
Multiple Stanley Cup championships.
Multiple conference championships. It's tough to see it end, but I think we'd have fun recapping.
All right. I'm sitting down with one Toto Wolff, because right now Toto has some very serious decisions to make, and that could really change the face of F1 racing for a while. Can he work out a deal with legendary engineer and designer Adrian Newey to bring him to Mercedes? Is Max coming to Mercedes? Who's going to be in that seat? Those decisions are going to just they're going to affect F1 for the next 5 to 10 years. But that's who I'm sitting down with the bar with. But who I'm happy to be sitting down with this morning is one Daniel Farrar, the CEO of Assembly Legal. Daniel, welcome to the pod. Tell us a little bit about your sports story. Maybe if you have someone you want to sit at the bar with this week, what do you got going on for us?
Thanks. This is great to be here. I'm enjoying listening to SMQB. It's great. A little bit on my story. I'm born and raised in New England. So when it comes to sports, I kind of have a little bit of heritage there with a few teams. I'll get into that in a minute. Today, I call home San Francisco. I spent a large portion of my career living abroad all over Europe. Back in the GE days of Jack Welch, that's when I kind of cut my teeth in the professional ranks. So I spent a lot of time going around with GE and GE Capital, turning around companies and running businesses all over the globe. That led me into a job in PE, and then I moved from private equity after a number of years of buying companies, putting them together, taking them apart, finding the value creation in that. I got recruited into the Silicon Valley to help transform tech companies, take them to the next level, bring them up to where oftentimes founders couldn't get them to in terms of growth, their stature. From a sports perspective, well, I gotta go with the Pats. Now I say that. I grew up with Pats when they were terrible. So I was back in the Jim Plunkett days, and they never could seem to turn.
Steve Grogan.
Ooh, yeah. Wow. As a kid, it was tough.
Well, they were in the Super Bowl with the Bears, right?
They were.
How did that turn out?
That was not a good day. I think we lost by 7.
Yeah, I think so.
It was terrible. I also love the Red Sox. I used to love to go to Fenway with my dad. But that was during the days of Carl Yastrzemski, not Mike Yastrzemski, who now plays for the Giants, who I also enjoy watching.
Who hit a home run at Fenway after meeting with his grandfather the other night, right?
You see his Carl Yastrzemski threw in the first pitch to Mike behind.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, that's cool.
That's very,
very cool. Yeah.
Bottom line, though, is you're a Tom Brady fan, correct?
I gotta say, I'm a
easy.
I like Tom Brady.
Yeah, well, who doesn't?
All right.
Oh, what'd you pay to get that? No,
I like.
Can't wait to see him at F1.
Well, listen, but you also have an affinity for cars, and so you're here for the race. That's and we want to get into that with you, but. We want to tell our listeners that one of the reasons we're excited to sit down with you is Assembly is going to be the first official sponsor of the SMQB's podcast.
Did you hear what Daniel said before? He has an expertise in taking things to the next level.
I know. That's right. That's Joe, right.
I heard him say he's going to tear down something first.
Yeah. Well, you do what you got to do. So, Pope, sorry, buddy, you're out.
Pope, we have some news for you.
Yeah. But we're really excited about that. Appreciative. We're looking forward. I've been a long time customer and client, and I know you guys have the best product on the market. So I don't know if you want to say a couple of things real fast before we get into the race. But
thanks for that. And thanks for being such a loyal customer for all our listeners. Chris was a longtime and longstanding PrimaWorks customer. A little bit of history on assembly. This goes all the way back to 1985. There was a company called PINS, which stood for Personal Injury Negligence Systems. And
yeah,
that became Needles. And
1985.
So we're coming up in 2020.
Yeah.
Is that a massive computer? Like,
wow. Wow.
In this industry. So you want to talk about lineage.
Yeah.
One of my very first firms was in PINS.
Is that right?
Yeah. Was it? Yeah. Were you compatible with Commodore computers?
I think we were on Abbott.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then in 2017-ish, in that kind of era, Ridge Road Partners and Thayer Street came in and they purchased Needles and later TrialWorks and put them together to create the largest case management install base in the industry. And so we had the idea that there could be a greater value creation here by really delivering the next generation of technology to the industry by creating cloud-based products, new, more ease of use, greater applications, libraries, et cetera. And it was a wildly, I think, great idea, and it's been super successful for us. We did launch the product Neos in its full-scale form about 3 years ago. And it has been an absolute runaway home run. This industry, if you look at PI, Mass Tort, and insurance defense, a little bit of family law and bankruptcy court, in the U.S. alone, it's about a $7 to $10 billion industry growing at about 6%.
Wow.
That said, Neos is growing at about 60%.
Wow.
Outstripping the industry a yard and a mile. And it's just been a great run for us. Just recently, so some bragging rights on Neos. We recently won the number one spot for the G2 Momentum report ahead of a lot of our competitors. I don't want to throw anybody to the bus here, but we are considered the momentum leader for technology.
We throw people to the bus all the time. It's our specialty. So you don't have to, but yeah, you don't have to.
It's gonna be a great country.
Yeah. Fair.
There you go. We are experiencing kind of, as a tech company selling software, we are experiencing an above average NPS score, which is a net promoter score. That's the evaluation of your client base on the system. We're scoring close to 78 on an NPS score out of 100. That's for a SaaS company. That's like unheard of.
Yeah.
That's like crazy. That's like maybe double what you would normally see on a SaaS platform.
I think what he's saying is that Neos and his company is the Max Verstappen of legal CRM.
I think so.
They're just running away with.
Well, you know what?
Like, there's no competition.
We're going to be talking about assembly and Neos. And I'll say this, you know, I mean, I've been using Neos for a little over a year now at our law firm. And I mean, we wouldn't function without it. So, We love it, and we're excited to have on board. Do you have anything else you want to say about Neos before?
Well, I think there's a couple of things, and the reason I think that firms love it and why it's doing so well is one of the things that we did, and I think, and we still do this day, we have as part of our processes what we call an integrated voice of the customer. Neos, 3 years ago, when we really wanted to put it in the market the way we wanted it, we over-indexed on UX UI, so that we could make it as Apple-like and as user-friendly as possible. So the
UX, UI being?
User interface.
Okay. So that's what we see. That's what the lawyers see.
Yeah, you wanted to make it as simple and as friendly as possible. But I will tell you, those cues, those design cues, came from lawyers. We used an integrated voice of the customer in our cabs, and we went out and asked them, what do you need? How does it need to look? What should the tech stack be? And that architected the technology, which is a technique that I've used in other companies, but it works particularly well here. We continue to do that. So as we make every roadmap advancement, we're always talking to our customer base to help us shape what that needs to look like so that it's hitting the mark for what they want, which happens to be what we did with Neos AI. We are going to be dropping an artificial intelligence embedded into the workflow solution of Neos in June of this year. And the entire first generation of it was architected and designed by 60 law firms.
In wow.
Is it awesome. Is it going to have a name? Can I suggest one? I mean, Jalen is a great name. you're looking for a name for the AI, Jalen, isn't that great?
Yeah. No, that would be the worst.
No, that's terrible.
Come up short all the time.
Sell the product.
Yeah.
It's going to be super powerful. It's going to cover demand content generation, medical records extraction, chronological summaries. And the way what we heard from our customer base about how to shake this product and Neos, was it was really around for Neos initially it was productivity, efficiency, and you know, time savings. For Neos AI, it's all around productivity and time savings. They really dug in on it and said, you know, if you can find ways for us to take hours out of our week that gets consumed by doing content or demand generation or letters or reviews, or you're giving me time back that allows me to focus on what I need to be doing for my clients.
Yeah.
That's how we focused on it. We're really excited about it. I think it's going to be a rally.
That's awesome. And by the way, one of the other great things is the support and the people. So that whenever you're rolling out new tech in an office, you want to have good support. And we certainly get that from Neos. So
especially coaches.
Yeah, I know, right?
Management.
Everything, right?
The people.
Yeah.
Player friendly.
NPS score, all right, sorts of stuff.
Saying the right thing.
All right, well, let's get into the race a little bit. Daniel, tell us, what are you looking forward to in the race, the Miami, third Miami Grand Prix, other than seeing Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, who are at the track, yeah, that's right, today. What are you looking forward to?
They're definitely Travis and Taylor are this year's big celebs. Last year, it was Tom Cruise and Shakira.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They were dancing up on up on the podium there for a while. My predictions for this one, I think it's going to be, in the top three, I think it's going to be Max again. He's won this twice before already. He's familiar with the track. He's, you know, and the guy performs. You got to love the guy. He rises to the occasion. Came in great times yesterday in the sprint. I think we can expect to probably see Checo and Leclerc on the podium with him.
Okay.
That's what
I think the spoiler, because we were out at the track yesterday watching sprint qualifying and practice. I was very impressed with how the McLaren was running on this track. I would not be surprised if at the end, if Lando takes one of those spots on the podium.
It's a good call. Yeah.
My favorite part of yesterday is Hal's telling us that he could see that the Sauber car was slower.
He's running
with his own eyes. I'm like, dude, it's 3.5 miles around the track and there's half a second different. You are not seeing that with your eyes.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, you must.
tell everyone about the track, because when I came down here, I got a lot of questions on where is it? Where? How do
sure,
they?
Sure.
Is it
so
new?
The track is not. It's not here in Miami,
right?
Say, down where we all are on the beach. The track is out at the Don Shula Stadium, and it's built so that it rides in and around the stadium.
Is it built just for this event, or is it an existing?
I believe they did put it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did, and it's a permanent track around. So like when there's football games and stuff, the track is there, like people park on the track.
Oh, wow.
On the circuit. Yeah. So
what's the number that was kicked around this week to the owner of the Dolphins for the race?
It was like, and
10 billion. He turned down, Stephen Ross turned down selling the Dolphins and the F1 race. 10 billion.
This thing is a diamond.
Oh yeah. Well, when you think about the Commanders just sold for a little over 6 billion. All right. And that was the highest of an NFL franchise ever. So you figure, take that. They're getting 4 billion for the race. That's what's being offered, is for one weekend a year for the race. That's a machine.
How many people come? What was last year? 300,000?
Yeah. I think there'll be something like 350,000 through the turnstile. So yeah. Well, I think it's going to be pretty wild. I mean, it's yesterday was pretty smooth. I didn't see any wrecks, really. We saw a couple people hit the wall a little bit, but nothing real serious. Last year, we saw one wreck. You know, they're always tinkering with the circuits a little bit, particularly in the first couple years of doing it. So we'll have to see if there's any. I think they call it mistake generators out on the circuit this year.
I'd agree with you. We didn't really see any, like, big issues. Hamilton had a bit of a tough run yesterday, but
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Mercedes in the sprint qualifying, both Russell and Lewis didn't make it.
Yeah.
They just can't get it together this year. Talking about Toto, I mean, before Toto lures anybody to that constructor, they got to get a lot of things in order.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I sort of jokingly said to you, but it was true. I went over to you when Hamilton didn't make it out of the first round for sprint qualifying. I said to House, I said, well, Adrian Newey just got another $100 million added onto his offer because, I mean, they need something, right? They need something at this point. So
for our listeners who followed a little bit about our F1 talk so far, Adrian Newey has been with Red Bull over a decade as their chief engineer and architect of that car. And he is the most sought after man in F1 right now, especially given the rocket ship that he has made in the last couple of years. And this past week, he announced he's leaving. They're finishing one more prototype of the car. There are a lot of rules changes coming to F1 in 2026, and everybody wants Adrian Newey to take their team into the next era of F1. And I think for people who love F1, that is the dominant story that we're going to be watching and waiting to see. Where does Adrian Newey land? Rumors of this past week is that the team principal for Ferrari, Fred Vasseur, didn't even come to Miami yet with the team because he was meeting with Adrian Newey in Europe to try to lure Newey. There's also a rumor that Newey just wants some time off and doesn't want to jump right to a team because this is kind of burn him out for a little while. But what do you guys think? I mean, like, what are the Vegas odds on where Newey lands?
Well, I heard a recent interview with him where he commented, and I'm not going to get the quote exactly right, but more or less it was like, you know, I've done so much in my career. It would still be wonderful to have time at Ferrari and to have worked with either Fernando or Lewis. So he could kill two birds with one stone if he ends up at Ferrari with Lewis moving over there. I think you gotta think that's the leader, right? I mean, Ferrari, you know, they've been down for the last several years, but they are still the quintessential F1 team. Daniel, right?
I think that's a great call. Ferrari definitely wants to get back to a reputation of being the leader in this, you know, this event, these events and the space and the technology. And they have kind of been lackluster for a long time. They just haven't really lived up to the promise of the brand or the name. I do think, though, there's a couple other things. Adrian is going to be able to, his dance card is going to be full.
Yeah.
So yeah.
There's going to be a lot of suitors for him if he's really in market. He does have some funky requirements. We were chatting about yesterday. You know, he preferred to have a design lab in the UK versus having to move to another country, which I think is an easy giveaway.
Yeah.
Right. Design lab.
that's right. Easy.
You can have it. I think Stoll at Aston, though, he's not Lance Zedarka's dad, but he's come out several times saying, I will pay for excellence. And they're kind of on this edge, like, what's it going to take to really be?
And they have the most state-of-the-art facility now in the world, right? Yeah.
There's a story to be told or a bet to be made that, you know, there could be a black horse who steps in and says, hey.
It was
that's interesting.
Williams, you know, Williams has a story.
Oh, yeah.
Too. And Williams is apparently making a play for him, too. I mean, it's hard to imagine a team that's not going to make a play for him.
Like, I think we can take Haas out.
Yeah, I think we can take Haas out. But the dance crew will be full.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Does F1 need this to happen? Does it need another team to become, you know, right now it's Max and Red Bull.
I think for the sport to always be vibrant and interesting, because you have a really diverse fan base.
Right.
And everybody doesn't love Oracle. And everybody doesn't love Max. So, you know, you want to pick your sports teams and you want to pick your F1 teams based on where your allegiance or your particular bias happens to be. And I kind of think we've gravitated to this. It's Oracle, it's Mercedes, it's Ferrari, it's McLaren. And then there's a bunch of JV teams.
Right.
Everybody else is trying to figure out, can I get into the big four?
But, you know, this is one of the things that I always say when people, you know, gripe about, oh, it's not interesting. Max wins every weekend. You know, I think this is one of the difference between American-centered sports and European-centered sports. There are people out there who are just as interested in watching the racing that's happening between 5, 6, and 7, because those teams, I mean, they're not going to be on the podium, but for what their resources are, they're racing against each other. And that's interesting. And I feel like the European crowd, they're okay with that. They don't always have to win to enjoy something, right? I mean, the Americans are like, you know, listen, I have the t-shirt. If you're not first, you're last, right? I mean, the Ricky Bobby, right? But I mean, but that's a very American viewpoint. And I think F1, I think there's plenty of people, maybe not in the American market. And that's where you're going to, if you want to grow this market, you're going to have more competition at the top.
I think that's a really interesting nuance, Chris. There's definitely an appreciation for the technology and the way the sport is run by this fan base. And while they do have, probably to a lesser degree, the same kind of team alliances that or allegiances that you might find from American fans, there is still some of that out there, though. And I think one of the things that's kind of like, this is an American bias, mine, but, you know, when you see all the points that come in for the top six places and it's always the same names, it does make the sport feel a little kind of like,
is there
something else here? It's always the same players. So why do we even need all the other people? They just like, fill the track out because it's always the same teams. And, you know, at the end of the day, we love to point to a driver who's got the skill set to do it, but I think what's happening now is the cars are being literally tuned and tailored to the way the drivers operate in a much more advanced level. And that's why you're seeing like Max being able to perform over and over again. And Adrian can find his way into one of these other teams to help them get to that next level.
And by the way, I think on that point, that's why you see a guy like Checo struggle sometimes, because that car is built for Max, who has his own unique driving style. And Checo has had to realize that, you know, that's not how he drives. That car is not built for him. Right. So,
you know, Milk asks a great question about, does F1 need Nui to move to a different team? And it's funny, you know, before Drive to Survive, Mercedes was on a run that went several years that didn't really bother anybody. First of all, Lewis is such a class guy, but it didn't have the grip of the United States viewership watching that. We're a very, very fickle, what have you done for me lately sports fan base. If this were to continue with Max winning by 20 seconds, race after race after race, and Red Bull going on the same run, I think the viewership would drop. I think some of the attendance might drop because people would have been there, done that. I went to one of these races. What Newey's move can create is competition, viewership, and just a real, hopefully what will be like a real, real rivalry between a couple of constructors.
Well, and to that point, talk about fickle. You're in Fickle City right now. I'm actually surprised that the turnout has been what it has been at the third year of the Grand Prix, because Miami is the place where everybody talk about, you know, something shiny walks by and people forget things here. So I was curious, as you know, yesterday was, I thought, pretty full for day one. And I think today's going to be slam packed. Lord knows the traffic getting out there was showed that there's a lot of people. All right. Last question on this. The new team, is it Andretti? Who's trying to get a team and he just filed suit? Mario Andretti.
Yeah, Andretti.
What is that team going to happen? They filed suit against the FIA. And I think some senators have actually called for an antitrust investigation because they turned down his application. Does Andretti get in? Is there a chance Newey goes to the Andretti team and you get a brand new team coming in 26?
Follow the money.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Always.
I don't think it's going to be decided on this one case, because Andretti does get the bid and it does go to court and they do allow him in. They're going to have to figure out, because what makes F1 so unique is that it's kind of a finite community.
Yeah.
Very exclusive. And if now it's just down a question to, I want to apply for a new team and I have to go through a process and I get in, how many teams are we going to expand into?
Yeah.
And does it create a subclass of F1?
Well, now you're IndyCar, right? Where they have 33 drivers out there, you know? Yes. Yeah.
I think it's okay to add maybe one, like two teams, because I think we've got some on the field already today that just aren't really living up to the promise and haven't for the last several years. And it might, I would prefer to see, keep it finite. That's, again, personal, but swap one team in that's out.
Kind relegation.
Of, yeah. Can it's I like say- you're not meeting enough in the annual points to maintain your position as one of the top.
You get relegated. I like it.
This guy, he might be like the CEO of the number one legal software in the country, but he's got a future in sports.
I think so.
He's got his stuff.
All right. Any last points on race weekend?
If not Max, who wins?
Come on, Charles. Come on, the special Ferrari blue for the weekend.
Yeah.
Pick one. Who do you got?
Just one?
Just if it's not going to be Max, who's it going to be?
All right, I'm going to go dark horse. If it's not Max, it's Leclerc.
Okay.
All right. And I'm going to pick the only guy who's won a race this year other than Max.
Science. And we should make a wager on that.
We should do that. Yes. Right. Yep. There we go. We will. There will be a wager.
Great. Yes. Rock Stadium and the Hard Rock app.
That's Let's right. Go. All right. It'll be a great weekend, and it's a sprint weekend, so we get double racing. So, House, you got a punchable face for us? Don't call it a
comeback. I have a couple punchable faces in the sport of basketball. Look, I think we've had enough with the antics of Pat Beverly. There were two things that he did this week in the ending of the Bucks season. One is when the game was basically out of reach and there was a Pacers heckler behind him, Pat Bev had enough of it and actually took a basketball and threw it at the guy's head. And the guy served volley back and threw it back at Pat, and he wasn't done with it and threw it at him again.
Like rocketed at him.
I think, you know, Rooster said, we don't know what the guy said. Maybe he deserved it. Maybe the guy deserved to be escorted away by security. Maybe the guy deserves to lose his seats. I don't know. If you're an NBA player, you just don't cross that line. You do not cross that line. And then to add insult into injury,
yeah,
he at the post-game press conference, there was a member of the media. She had asked him a question, and he said, well, do you listen to my podcast? And she said, no. Well, you're not entitled to ask a question then. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah.
Grow up.
Listen, that you know, fighting with the fans ever since the mayhem at the what was the thing?
The Knicks game.
In Detroit, yeah. Ever since then, that mayhem in Motown, they do not look kindly on players interacting with fans. I mean, league, this is going to be a big suspension for him, I think. And we haven't heard anything come out. We're 2 days post now. We haven't heard anything from anyone about comments that would have triggered this, right? It's nobody said that there was some racial element to it or
backstory.
Yeah, we haven't heard that, but usually that comes out pretty quickly. And he's he's got a history of being a loose cannon. So
I just have one more punch. It's going to need two fists, both my feet. I'm taking on a city of 10 million people, 12 million people, admittedly. Knicks fans.
Oh, boy.
I mean,
oh, boy. Oh, boy.
I thought you were going to punch your own fan.
Yeah.
That was last week.
Yeah, right. That's right.
But really, I mean, they are so act like you've been there before. They're just such children. And they whine for every single foul and the whole.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Wait, is this happening?
Is this happening?
The irony is really thick here.
This is happening. This is happening. And even after winning, they're still attacking. You won. Move on. Take on the Pacers. Like, I
don't even know what to say.
I have just become a major Pacers fan. It's a city of losers. Sorry, Rooster.
Wow.
I can't believe that just happened.
Okay. That was interesting.
Philly fan ripping on other cities' fans.
Amazing.
You never
and complain and fans whining about referees.
Whining, I mean.
Wow, holy. That was remarkable. What a moment on the podcast. Wow. All right. Who's got a lasso?
Barbecue sauce.
I have one.
Yeah.
Well, again, it's race weekend. It's sort of a special show. We're recording on a Saturday. You know, one thing that F1 has done is really tried to support young women in racing. And they've launched what's called the Academy. I'm not sure the age requirements, but you have young women, 17, 18, 19, you know, probably up to their mid-20s, who are getting support driving. And we got to see a little bit of their practice round yesterday at the track. And it's pretty cool to see them in Red Bull livery and Ferrari livery and Mercedes. And they're all paired up with the big, you know, with the big teams. And so I just thought it was pretty cool to see the industry putting its money where its mouth is and supporting young women drivers. And there was a great article, House, you sent it around on ESPN this week about who's going to be the first woman to make an F1 team. I think we're probably a little ways away from that still, but the Academy is a big step forward, and good for F1 for supporting it. And I'm looking forward to seeing them drive a little bit this weekend too.
Yeah.
So any other lassos? Have any buzzer beaters?
Well, don't look now.
Oh, here we go.
But the stadiumless, cityless, fanless Oakland A's are nearing 500 and a game and a half back in the AL West.
That would be amazing.
It would be one of the most incredible sports stories if this team could somehow pull off the AL West and play like inside of an empty stadium. I love this story developing. Please keep going. They have the hottest closer in baseball, Mason Miller. This guy only throws at 100 plus miles per hour. I am really rooting on the Oakland A's to just screw it to baseball.
It's like they're the Cleveland Indians.
Yeah, it is. It's Major League. It's really Major League happening. That's right. Yeah, Major League was the sixth seed in the baseball movie bracket this March for the SMQBs.
Right.
Didn't advance very far, unfortunately. So that is a good story. And I'll just say it as a buzzer beater. The Phillies have the best record in baseball as of right now. I'll give it to you. I'm going to give it to you. I'll let you have it.
Send you guys a parade route.
All right. Anybody got anything else for the week? Daniel, thank you for being here. We're so happy to partner with you guys. We look forward to spreading the good word for everything you guys do. Thanks. The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first-place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay. And he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.